You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 27 October. Renergen results due today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petri Radenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. U.S. and local indices, they're looking weak. Should we be bearish or is this opportunity? Andreas van Heerden from Afrimat on results. They spent the period ramping up bunches of projects. Construction materials more than doubled profits. What's happening there? Some thoughts from me on Microsoft versus the Alphabet results. We've got some stark contrasts there. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. AngloGold Ashanti will pay SARS 4.5 billion rand to walk away from SA. 4.18 billion is dividend withholding tax and then a security transfer tax bill of 351 million. Business Day, clicks sales grow as consumers splash out on small luxuries. This is the lipstick effect. It's fairly common. When things are tough, people spend down, but they still buy luxuries, just small, cheaper ones. Morning markets, the US is red, S&P off 1.2%, NASDAQ down 1.9%. Over in the east, it is green, Sydney up 0.5%, Tokyo 1.5% higher. Commodities, mostly green, gold, 1,998. Brent is fractionally red, 89.16. Platinum, 9.14. Palladium, 1,146. Rand is 18.93. Bitcoin, 34,100. 10 cent up 0.8% in Hong Kong. And top 40 opening call, 8 points to the upside. That is 0.001% green.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcasts.
Jenny and I with Petri Radenhuis. He, of course, from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, let's start offshore. The S&P 500, which peaked back in sort of July. We've got the NASDAQ as well, which peaked at about the same period, about a week later in July. Both of them now looking weak. Lower lows, lower highs. What's your technician view on this? I mean, are we heading lower? Are we likely to have the bears in control for the rest of the year?
Good morning, Simon. And yes, it'd be short and sweet. I think, I mean, we're almost at that point now where we're starting to look at flat return for the year. Well, the NASDAQ actually ran quite a bit harder than the S&P, but the S&P started off the year, if I look at the ETF that we use on it, basically, it's only about 7% to go, and then it's basically flat for the year, right? I mean, 7% is a lot, I know, but from what I see, it's lower highs, lower lows, like you say, and from a trend following perspective, that does show, you know, downward momentum. And also, if you just look at simple things, so for example, if we look at South African top 40 index, and we use a weekly chart, also we use quite a bit of data, and we draw a nice channel line back from all the way from the lows of 2020, you know, the COVID crash lows, essentially. Put a nice little channel there, and we connect that low in March, April 2020 to the lows that we made October last year. We've got a nice sort of upward sloping channel there, which over the last 2 weeks has broken to the downside. So this, to me, is also indicative of a relatively longer-term trend that's busy breaking, right? And the S&P 500 isn't really much different. We've had, obviously, some rough times during 2020. I think the market caught most people by surprise. It was relatively bad. And then that expectation was for it to continue to be, you know, bear market. However, we did see this year that that momentum, I think, has now come to an end. I think we probably pushed down to around 3,500 on the S&P 500.
Wow.
Which is quite a bit further down, right? I mean, that's what, 600 or so points, 650
or so. Yeah, 15-odd% lower.
Yeah, so look, it's not indicative that the world's going to end. Markets have cycles. Sometimes they have to pull back somewhat, and, you know, making 20% corrections is generally healthy for markets, right? So I think that's at least initially a downside target. I don't think that happens within the first, within the next 6 months or by the end of the year. I think it takes a little bit longer than that. I think that we're just in a time where, even from a fundamental perspective, there are so many challenges that we're facing at the moment, and particularly, inflation and money supply, or too much money supply and extremely high inflation is a major issue. And that's if we completely ignore the geopolitical things happening in the world as well. So from where I sit, at least, gold is looking really good.
So let's touch on gold quickly, because gold was not looking good for ever in a day. I've been, well, not ever in a day, but certainly the trend in gold since that peak back in May of this year at 2000, above 2000. In fact, it almost got to 2100. And thereafter, it was trending lower. And of course, war in the Middle East, suddenly gold's almost back at $2,000. And as you say, looking to perhaps take out those highs.
Again, we'll lean on the history here and go back as far as the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. So January 2020, gold price had rallied relatively hard off the back of quite a bit of fear to $1,500.
Yeah.
Right? By the time August 2020 rolled around, gold was sitting, I think it topped up, the high here that I've got was $2,075.
Yeah.
Then over since then, essentially, gold has been trading in a range where the bottom end of this range is around $1,640 an ounce, and the upper end of this range is, just above 2,070, in fact. And we've hit that 2,070 number three times now. I think the most recent time that you mentioned in May was 2,081.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big trading range, right? So, it looked in May as if we're going to move down to the bottom of that trading range. I think I even put the call on our blog saying that, look, you want to be short gold into this. But as you say, over the last 3 weeks, we've had gold rally essentially from $1,800 to $1,988, where it's trading now. So it seems to me that this geopolitical risk obviously, is obviously a factor. This is how it works. When people are afraid, they tend to get out of the high-risk equities and into the stuff that they can hold and see. And generally, that's the shiny rock, right? Gold is that panic asset that people buy. So is this the time that we see gold actually break and sustainably hold above $2,000 and go for that all-time record high? I think if there's no immediate de-escalation of tensions in the Middle East, then absolutely, yes, that's what happens.
Yeah, I take your point. And it is gold doing what gold says on the sticker. It's an inflation asset. It's a fear asset. We have both of those. Gold should be at those all-time highs. In this case, it's about $90 off, but certainly that 2,081 from earlier in the year looking good. We'll leave it there. Pitsley Radenhaus, Herenia Capital Advisors. And that's our question today on LinkedIn and X. Bullish or bearish? Equity markets are looking weak. Hey, look, the Nasdaq is still up 29% year-to-date. The S&P, as Pitsley said, just over 7. Our market 4% into the red. What do you think is going to happen into the end of the year?
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Andreas van Heerden, CEO at Afrimat. Results for 6 months ending August saw group revenue up 9.6%, headline earnings per share up 4.4%, a dividend of 40 cents, a net cash balance of just under 280 million. Andreas, appreciate the time. My sense from the numbers, you mentioned it in the commentary, a lot of work this year has really been, in this 6 months, investing in projects that are really only going to reap benefits sort of down the line. A lot of prep, not much to show for just yet in terms of profits.
Yeah, I think so. I think we still got the benefit of previous projects. The two really exciting things that helped us in this half was, firstly, We went on quite a significant efficiency improvement drive in our construction materials business, and that paid off very nicely, and we doubled the profits there. And then on our mining side, our domestic sales of iron ore also compensated for the weaker dollar price and also the reduction in volumes due to some Transnet issues on the export side. So we did see the benefit, although it may be more of countering negatives to a certain extent. That's why we could see a bit of a growth in profit. But you're absolutely right. The big focus is on some exciting, really new projects that is coming on stream now and that should start showing the results in the next period.
The one negative perhaps was in Nkomati, the anthracite mine. That seemed, I thought we would have seen more in H1. There were some delays, but you said that will ramp up in the second half and be fully going.
You know, we took a conscious decision a couple of months ago to really focus on getting Nkomati ramped up to higher volumes than we initially anticipated. So for the first half, it was really investment and opening up the mine, making sure that the two open pits as well as the underground shaft is ready and fully developed. And that was done. So we did have, you know, because of some of the delays we had, we did have a slightly slower first half, but really getting the mine ready for excellent performance from here on.
You mentioned construction materials doubling there. You mentioned efficiencies. Was that just efficiencies, or are you seeing some increased demand in the space?
We did see some increased demand. The revenue increased by about 23%, and the profits went up 113%. So it did come off a low base. The demand that we see is really from road building and, funny enough, rail maintenance around the country.
Lafarge, the acquisition you announced during the period, what's the timeline for that to be closing?
Well, we're waiting for the Competition Commission, and that ruling, you know, is imminent. We should get it any day now. And then we're still waiting for the Section 11 approval. You know, that's not we've crossed all the hurdles there. So those are the two things, and both of them are imminent. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll be able to close the deal and start moving.
Interesting point I picked up as well in the results. Your CFO, Peter De Wit, you've actually temporarily seconded him as an integration officer to, I suppose, make sure it all just goes smoothly and as planned. Is this something you typically do with bigger deals?
Yeah, we normally do that. When we do an acquisition, we normally assign somebody to do the integration and that understands our business and our systems very well. And because this is the biggest one we've ever attempted, we took somebody that has a very, very good understanding of our business and has the authority to call on resources to go there and go do it.
You mentioned bulk commodities. This is your largest profit contributor. Iron ore sales up 29.7%. There's lots moving here. I mean, Jenkins really had a good period, but you've also got the Driehoek spun coming online during the period, did you not?
We did, yes. Yeah, so Driehoek Spun is an iron ore mine that we bought as part of the Khoza transaction. Mm-hmm. And to ensure our long-term sustainability, we decided to open up Driehoek Spun. We started working there. And now we have Driehoek Spun, Jenkins and Demmerling producing. And we are splitting the products between the export market and the domestic market.
How much do you have in terms of life of mine between those three then? Because initially it was fairly short, but as you say, you've added on to it to extend that the iron ore market.
Yeah, at the moment we have in excess of 15 years life in total.
Okay, wow, that's a biggie. And exports, I imagine that is Transnet dependent. How's Transnet doing? Because the iron ore line seems to work better than perhaps the coal line.
Yeah, we did see a bit of a reduction in volume compared to last year in this first half. But last year, first half, funny enough, on the Transnet line, did very well. You know, we were full on target by the end of August. And then but this year, for the first half, we saw a 10% reduction. But from our construction materials business, we can see when Transnet is doing maintenance, because then we see an increase in sale of ballast stone that is used under the rail. And we've seen a significant increase in that. So that bodes well for the future.
Yeah, that is certainly good news. Your future materials and metals, a new division you've kind of carved into it, Glenova being the first project. This is a greenfield project, if my memory serves. Is it producing or is it still in ramp-up?
It is a greenfield. We've just commissioned the first plant, which we call the high-grade optimization plant. Mm-hmm. It's the first phase of beneficiation. So that has just been commissioned and being ramped up now. The next phase is the so-called single superphosphate plant. That is under construction, and we hope to start commissioning by the end of, well, not hope, we should start commissioning by the end of November this year. So we hope to have everything in full production and start showing financial results from early in the new financial year.
Load shedding, it certainly impacts your operations to a degree. Is it impacting perhaps your customers in some cases, even perhaps more than yourselves?
Yes, we saw that in our industrial minerals business. It impacted ourselves, but our larger industrial customers were really complaining about this. They were impacted quite badly.
We leave it there. Andreas van Heerden, CEO Aframat. Always appreciate the insights.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So this past week, we saw very contrasting results from Microsoft and Alphabet, which I think tell us a bunch. So Microsoft, the cloud numbers were really strong. And artificial intelligence, AI, is hardly even starting to kick in. Because, of course, they've got that giant stake in OpenAI. And they say, yeah, there's a bit there, but there's a lot more coming. Contrast with Alphabet, who've got their own cloud, and cloud growth was modest. They were very coy around AI. YouTube ads did well, but the market is saying, hang on a sec, what about future revenue? What about the future, you know, artificial intelligence, cloud, etc.? They want more than just adverts. And their key product, which is probably YouTube, but their other key product, which is search, is just dying. I don't know if you've been on Google.com. I mean, so as I'm talking, a tweet comes across my screen. The African countries that start with a letter K, and it comes back. Yeah, none start with the letter K. Closest is Kenya, which sounds like a K, but is actually the K sound and not the letter. I mean, it's just, in some ways, being stupid. It's a tale of two CEOs, Microsoft, Satya Nadella, Alphabet, Sundar Pichai, and without a shadow of a doubt, Microsoft has been winning this. Interestingly, year-to-date, they're kind of the same return, although Google had been well ahead. But if we go back a decade, which is pretty much the term of those two CEOs, Microsoft 820% ex-div, Google 380%. Google/Alphabet really is losing its mojo and Microsoft taking over, particularly cloud. If artificial intelligence is going to be a big part of the future, those data centers, those clouds, they are a giant part of it. And Google just seems to not be anywhere. That's it for today. We're chatting with Wayne McCurry yesterday about Bytes Technology. Some actually really good results from them. It's one of the very few technology stocks on the JSE. It's not an innovator creating product. It's selling software and the like in the UK. So its earnings are in sterling, which adds an advantage there. And we asked you on LinkedIn and X, do you hold the stock? Almost half of you said watching but not holding. A third said you'd never heard of it. It was, of course, spun out of Ultron about a year and a half or 2 years ago. But they are shy. You never see the execs in the media. They publish results and carry on with their day. The rest of your minority said, yep, you're holding it. It is a great business. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and X. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. SA banks not profitable enough.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.